Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
The Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. She's a Democrat. Peoples-Stokes serves Buffalo's 141st Assembly District. Welcome back. We are always proud to have you with us, Majority Leader. You're getting to be a regular guest member. We so appreciate your being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be on your show.
I want to ask you something to begin with. Because there are some people who, you know, just don't understand the way it works. The speaker is the top guy in the assembly, but the next person is you, the majority leader. So my question to you is, what does the majority leader do?
Well, pretty much manages the floor, all activities on the floor, sets up the debate calendar, decides what resolutions go out on our calendar, and makes sure we deal with the speaker's priorities on the floor.
Now, that's exactly where I was going to go. Tell me about how you assess what the speaker's priorities are. Do you have meetings with him? Does he say, now, Crystal, this is what I want? Or is it more subtle than that?
He'll say, this is what our conference wants. So we have conference meetings where the entire 107 of us come together and discuss issues. And the ones that resonate, you know, the loudest with colleagues are priorities for him, but then that's not the only priority that we have because each of us represents a constituency. Some of that constituency is labor, some of it is business, some of it is advocates, some of it is not-for-profits, and so clearly their opinions weigh in as well. So the speaker and his staff speak to everybody that has any reference to an issue prior to deciding that it is something that should move forward.
Now, how long have you been in the assembly?
This will be going on 20 years, I've been. Yep.
That's quite a record, no question about it. So now,
yes,
the speaker is black, you're black. How have things changed when it comes to diversity in the assembly?
Well, let me say I'm unapologetically black. I was born that way. I don't believe God makes mistakes, so I'm grateful to be what I am, and I'm never going to be apologizing for it. But I think that,
by the way, did anybody ask you to? I didn't ask you to.
But a lot of people think you. A lot of people think you should. You know. There's still a certain segment of us here in this country that is kind of based on a whole caste system where you have a certain space and that's all you can go. Well,
right.
We broke, both the speaker and I broke out of that space that people think you're limited to, and because of it, his agenda has been always about families. And because so many of our people, black and brown people, have been incarcerated for whatever reasons or criminalized for whatever reasons, it's just been a big focus on criminal justice reform. And, you know, I respect his desire to do that, and vast majority of our membership support him as well. And so we've been working on a real strong criminal justice reform agenda, which, by the way, from my perspective, I think will eventually save the state of New York a lot of money.
How so?
Well, I mean, it costs you $60,000 to incarcerate someone for a nonviolent crime. If you can figure out how to not have him incarcerated, that $60,000 could add up to be providing some other service and or cutting people's taxes. The criminal justice system is very expensive. I think not just, you know, the speaker, but I think in many cases even some Republicans realize that we really can't afford to be as tough on crime as folks would like us to be.
And yet every time a governor has tried to close down a prison to save some money, there has been economic development arguments from the place the prison is. How do we deal with that?
Well, I deal with it from the reality that I understand that there is a prison industrial complex here, that this is about economics, why so many people need to be locked up. And so you got to understand the reality of it, but work from the other perspective that can change. By the way, there's a prison now in Orange County that I understand some business folks are getting access to tax incentives to do marijuana growing and cultivating in a former prison. So, I mean, ones that have closed can be used for something else in the future, who knows what. But I think it's important that we maintain a real kind of fair and equitable system of criminal justice in the state.
Now, following up on that, we hear an apparent deal has been reached between New York State Senate and Assembly on several criminal justice measures, including the sealing of some criminal records to give convicts a second chance in life and a measure to hold gun manufacturers legally liable for people who commit crimes with their guns. So you got a majority, you've got a veto-proof majority in both houses of the legislature, you've got this program on the floor, you've got a governor who, of course, has his own problems right now. How does it all work out?
I think it's going to work out fine. All of those things that, you know, are on the table in terms of reform may not happen. Some of them will and some of them won't. And I can't be specific about that yet, although I do know that making gun manufacturers responsible or liable for the proliferation of guns in our communities, that already happened. That got passed yesterday now. Whether or not the governor signs it or not, I can't speak to that. We have to reach out to him. But I do know that at some point it does make sense to, you know, make people responsible for their effort to find new markets for their product that they manufacture. And it's exactly what they do. Every time we limit or reform gun control in the state of New York, you know, they find a way to have somebody bringing them in from South Carolina or Ohio or wherever they come from that you don't have to, you know, follow any rules to get them. And they literally sell them on the streets. And so, you know, somebody has to be responsible at some point. So that one happened yesterday. I think that, you know, the less is more parole issue will probably happen as well, so that, you know, folks are not getting sent back to prison for technical issues. Criminal issues, yes. Technical issues, no. So those sort of criminal justice issues we are working towards continuing to see some progress on.
So what would you call a technical issue, just for our definition so that we understand?
A technical issue could be that you were asked to show up at 10 o'clock and you didn't get there until 12 because, I don't know, the car broke down, whatever. It took you a long time to get there and the PO says you violated this rule. And that is a violation because you can't. You have to follow all of the rules that you're given. But it should not be the kind of violation that would send you back to be incarcerated.
We're talking with Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. So, Majority Leader, let me ask you this. There's crime all over New York and other places, too, besides New York. And people, apparently, I've been reading polling for the New York mayoral election in which people are talking about, you know, crime being a significant piece of why people are voting the way they are. So is your answer that there are just too many guns and that's what's causing the crime, or are there other factors?
No, oh, no. I think there are a ton of factors, honestly. And I think you can pretty much start with the history of this country. This country was built as a violent proposition. I mean, people literally came in and took something from folks violently, took their land, you know, took everything they had, killed them, sent them west. And, you know, and there's been a history of violence in this country ever since its inception. And so what I think, you know, if we want to look towards ways to calm that violence and so that it doesn't proliferate itself, then we got to start doing things that are more restorative justice. Instead of focusing on incarcerating someone for nonviolent crimes, where basically they learn how to be more of a criminal when they're incarcerated, when they get out, they can't work. What can they do except recidivate? So all of those sort of things need to be looked at in detail to figure out how do we get us to be a more restorative, just society. We're not there yet. That's not to excuse anybody for committing crimes because it's intolerable. I don't care who does it. Everybody needs to follow the law, the intent of the law. Everybody doesn't follow the intent of the law, but everybody, nor does everybody go to jail for violating it. The justice system is still not, well, I would say certainly not blind. I know it's got a little cover over one of its eyes, but it can smell money pretty good. Yeah. And if the more you can pay for counsel and defense, the less likely you are to go to jail. That's not a just system. And so there are a number of things that weigh into this that, you know, it'll take time to think through. So I just don't think we can narrow it down to one or two things.
So I'm fascinated by when you use the word restorative. Could you flesh that out for us a little bit? Tell us a little bit more about how that would look?
Well, I mean, it depends on if it's a classroom full of fifth graders, then you want to understand why you feel like you need to push this one because he pushed you. Why did he push you? And is there something going on? Did something happen at home this morning that hurt him? So, you know, hurt people hurt other people. So it's like figuring out what is it that's causing you to react this way. And then asking the person who he pushed, how do you not react the same way he reacted because you understand what he's going through or went through or whatever. And the same thing with adults. It's more about conversation than it is about making somebody, you know, pay for what they did. So you hurt me, now I'm going to hurt you. Or you broke this law, so I have to put you here where you're not going to have any sort of education that will provide you with an opportunity to become a contributing citizen when you get out. Or I'm going to keep you for 50 years, even though the crime that you did has been absolved after 10. I mean, all of those things add value to the potential of restorative justice. Hmm. And so I think we have to begin looking at it from that perspective.
Uh-huh. Now, decades after a judge ordered New York State Police to diversify its ranks, the agency remains overwhelmingly white. Only 4% of the agency's more than 4,700 troopers are black. Only 6% are Hispanic. The percentage of black troopers has fallen since 2015 when the courts lifted a consent decree that had once set goals for diversifying the force. Several black troopers told the Associated Press, from which I am reading, that discrimination still exists within the agency. Some speak of being subjected to racist slurs. The acting superintendent of the state police told the AP he's committed to recruiting more black and Hispanic troopers. Do you believe him?
I do believe him. I think most agency heads would like to see that happen, but clearly it's a challenge. And there is no question that there are people who are in and run and manage our state agencies and institutions that have racist tendencies. And if they're allowed to treat people unfairly on the job based on their race, that's racist. And that means that that institution, whether it be the state troopers or not, is a racist institution if they allow it to happen. And so, you know, the superintendent, if he wants to have more black and brown people interested in it, then he's got to remove some of those people within his structure that make it uncomfortable for them to be there.
You grew up, of course, as a person of color, and clearly you were subjected to racism. Now here you are, one of the top officials in New York State. If you look back on it, what can you tell us about what it was like?
It wasn't easy. I was told I wasn't college material. I was told I couldn't go to a historically black college. I mean, I was told I should be a housewife. I was told I should work in a factory. But I didn't grow up in a household where people told you that somebody else could tell you what your potential is. You know what your potential is, so no matter what they think. And grew up in a household where I understood, you know, racism. And I understood the class system. We didn't mind talking about that in my household. My parents didn't mind talking about it. And so I understood how people think and how they feel. But that has no reference to me. So I just pushed past it, and that's how we end up here. And I would say the same thing for the speaker. He pushed past it as well. Not that it's gone anywhere, because it is still here, but we push past it and keep getting the work done.
Since we last spoke, former Officer Derek Chauvin is convicted of murdering George Floyd. Your reaction to that, and whether we'll see more officers convicted in the future?
I hope that conviction says that, you know, the American justice system is finally ready and prepared to hold everybody accountable. Nobody has the right to murder someone. I don't care if they are sworn to serve. They're supposed to be protecting and serving us, and that's what they should do. So I hope that this is, you know, precedent setting. I know one thing for sure, is his murder in broad daylight did help a lot of people understand that we do live in a racist caste system society. And there's no way to get around it. Even people who were in denial about it saw some reality with that. And so I think that that helped move us along in terms of our ability to communicate and understand each other from different cultures by leaps and bounds. And it's sad to say somebody had to die to help us move there, but sometimes it takes all things to move things forward, and I think we've made some progress.
Let me ask you this. Betty Rosa is now the new education commissioner. Is that good news?
Betty Rosa is a very committed educator. I'll tell you that. She's committed to doing a great job. She did well when she served as chancellor, which I now believe Lester Young is. So I'm sure she'll be fine.
You have a number of important, in quotes, phone numbers on your website, including immigration services. Can you talk about that for a moment? What are you hearing from your district about ICE and immigration services?
Well, I haven't heard a lot of complaints as I did before. But you do know that, you know, Buffalo is a refugee settlement center. And so in my district, I have a lot of awesome services that are provided for these people who are seeking asylum. Some of them come here just because they're waiting to get to Canada. And some of them end up staying in Buffalo. And so they have done, you know, a great job of adding to the value of our community and to the culture of our community. And we're grateful to have them there. So, yes, immigrant services are important. You do want these people to be protected. You do want them to have access to some sort of quality of life that, you know, values them as being a human being.
When it comes to upstate New York, which has a lot of Republicans, is there a philosophy that you guys are following, Democrats are following, in order to get those people to convert to a Democratic way of life?
Well, I'm a little conflicted by that question because I grew up in a household where my mother was always Republican and my father was always Democrat. They didn't have a different look at values or, you know, principles. They looked at them the same way. They just happened to be in a different party. And so I really do think that there's always opportunities to suggest, work for, and include inclusiveness outside of party lines.
So how did you become a Democrat if your parents were Republicans?
Well, my dad was a Democrat. My mom was a Republican. I actually kind of just based on listening to people who were running for office, like Jesse Jackson was running for president. I couldn't vote for him if I wasn't a Democrat in the primary, right?
Right.
So if you pay attention to the people who are running for office, it's more important. That's more important than it is in what their party is, in my opinion. And so but I think it's a failed opportunity on behalf of some in the Republican Party who want to consistently be divisive, anti-criminal justice reform, you know, anti-supportive people, want to believe in the Bible, but only for yourself and your family and not for anyone else. I mean, you know, I think it's a mistake for that party. I'm from Erie County. There are a lot of Republicans in my county, and I personally know a lot of them, and they're not all white. Some of them are black. But they generally don't vote for Republican candidates who espouse negative energy, but they are still Republicans. People focus on a good energy, then it wouldn't matter what party you're in.
I want to remind people that we're talking to our friend, Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. Now, let me ask you this. Cuomo, let's talk about the Cuomo troubles. There was sex harassment. The latest Siena College poll still finds New Yorkers don't want him to resign, but many voters would like to elect someone besides the three-term governor when the next gubernatorial election occurs in 2022. Do you think he'll run again, and should he? Let me just start this by being provocative and telling you, I think he is going to run. Assuming he's not impeached, I think he's going to run. So will he be impeached?
I don't know. I'm not a part of that judiciary committee, so I have no idea what evidence they're reviewing and what that evidence says. So I don't know whether he'll be impeached or not.
From what you know, do you have a personal view on this, whether he should be impeached?
I've always said that I would like to see a due process. You know, I'm of a ethnicity of people who often didn't get a due process, so I like to see that happen for anybody. It doesn't matter who they are.
So do you see anyone? This is what we call an honesty question. I'm sorry to do this to you. But do you see anybody who could take him on right now, either in a primary or a general election? The Republicans are appointing this guy Zeldin, or apparently are, who's a Trumper in blue state New York. What do you make of that?
Actually, I don't see a Trumper going anywhere in the state of New York. I mean, clearly they have their little, you know, one quarter.
Why would they do that?
It's not enough to be a majority.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. I can't even imagine. But, you know, this is the kind of country where anybody who wants to run can run. So anybody who thinks they can beat him, they should do it. And quite honestly, if he thinks he wants to run again, he should do it.
Do you think that the Republicans are saying, okay, even in New York, we're afraid of the Republicans' obedience to Trump? Do you think that's why they get a Trumper to run?
I can't even imagine why a person would be a Trumper, so I can't explain that to Mr. Sharon. I really can't.
So let's talk about, is there anybody, for example, Tish James, who you see as a potential to take Cuomo on in a primary, Democratic primary?
I don't see the person, Democrat or Republican, but that doesn't mean that they're not out there. Maybe they haven't announced themselves yet.
Okay. Now, let's move to cannabis. Recreational cannabis, marijuana in New York has been legalized. You've supported this for a long time. Are you worried at all about people driving while high?
Actually, I'm not, because there's some 500,000 or more people in the state of New York who are medical marijuana patients. In fact, I live in Western New York, where one of our docs is one of the largest prescribing medical marijuana docs. And so I don't see any problem with it now, because there's so many people driving, and so I don't see why it would make a difference.
Do you see a difference between marijuana and alcohol when it comes to, you know, bad drivers?
I think so. I think marijuana tends to make you slow down, to be more cautious, and I think alcohol tends to speed you up and be a little bit more reckless. By the way, in our legislation, we did provide for resources to do the research on trying to determine what is impairment with marijuana. Because as you know, marijuana stays in your system a very long time. And just because it's in your system, THC, does not mean you're impaired. So what we have now is you can blow into something, they can say, oh yeah, you have THC in your system. But it cannot tell if that THC has impaired your ability to drive. And so the science is not there on yet, so we've added resources to our legislation that was just passed and signed to do the research. Find that out. We're a much more innovative, creative society now. It should not take us as long as it took to get a breathalyzer to figure out how to determine if someone is impaired by THC.
In any case, I just want to remind everybody that graciously, Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes is joining us. She's the Majority Leader of the New York State Assembly, the number two person in the Assembly, and whom handles everything that's on the floor over there. Have you ever seen anything on the floor, Majority Leader, that really, I mean, you read about American history where somebody attacked, one senator attacks another with a cane. Has anything like that ever happened?
No. No. No, I'm sorry to laugh, but it's almost funny. You know, it does get sometimes very volatile in our chambers. You know, we represent very different communities. Some of us are Republicans, some are Democrats, some conservatives, some liberal. So there are heated debates. But no, we've never gotten to that point where anyone wanted to physically hurt another person, which I'm grateful that we, you know, can deliberate in a very calm manner.
Okay, so let's talk about the Adult Survivors Act, which recognizes that New York's current statute of limitations effectively bars individuals who are 18 years or older at the time of an alleged sexual abuse from seeking civil redress because the statute of limitations fails to take into account the number of years it may take for survivors of sexual abuse to process the abuse and come forward to confront their abuses. So will it make a difference?
So is this the thing that would add additional time for someone to say, I was hurt or I was abused?
Yes.
Or I was assaulted?
Yes.
Or I was harassed on the job, even though it happened 6 years ago. I'm just now, I need more time before I say it. I'm not sure where that's necessarily coming from. I do understand, you know, what happened with the child victims. That when I, you know, feel like the Catholic Church should have been held responsible for protecting or hiding the fact that they had people in their ranks that were being abusive. I don't think this is the same situation, and, you know, I really don't know that people need to have additional time to say that someone hurt me. If someone hurt you, say it right now. You know, I honor and want to respect their desire to have that as a right, but I'm not sure that we need to be extending the time for them to come to that or to come to that realization that I need to say something. You need to say something immediately when it happens.
Let's talk a little bit, if we can, Majority Leader, about redistricting. We're about to lose, because of 89 people not coming to the door, we're about to lose a congressional seat. Now, a lot of people, because a lot of people's careers will be affected, are now talking about where will that come from? Will it be the Republicans, since the Democrats have the majority? Will there be a gerrymander? What can you tell us?
I have no idea how that's going to look, but I can tell you that if, you know, this were a Republican majority no one would even think twice about what they were doing. No one would even think about it. They would do exactly what they wanted to do to protect their party's interests. And so for anyone to think that Democrats would not do something similar, I would wonder what is their thought process.
So there is a commission that is supposed to be fair and report back to the legislature, who will have this last say. So
let me ask you, what is fair? What is fair? And who determines that? The good government people, the Democrats that are on there, the Republicans that are on there. I think it will be fair. It'll be fair, and it'll be what's in the best interest of all of the voters in the state of New York. I actually know a few of the people that are appointed there. I think they're very credible, well-intended, and they understand the process. It's disturbing that we're going to lose a congressional rep, but, you know, we got to make the right call on where that comes from, and I think they will.
I got one last question, and then I know you've got to go and do your thing with the assembly. Let me ask you this. The CDC says vaccinated people can ditch masks in most situations now. Was that a good idea?
Are you vaccinated, sir?
I am.
Me too. Me too. So yeah, I would be around you without a mask. you're vaccinated. I would feel comfortable doing that. But I think I'm not comfortable because I don't know whether people are honest about whether or not they've been vaccinated. So in most cases, I will keep a mask on.
In any case, we've been talking to Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. Majority Leader, we are so happy to have you, and thanks so much for showing up. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Alan. You take good care of yourself and stay strong.
Hey, you too.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.